This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and here today I'm with Tyler Broderick and Kelly Buckingham, both of the VOA, which is now what was Northern Wyoming Mental Health Services mm-hmm. here in Buffalo. Hello, welcome.
Thank you for taking some time
to talk to me.
Yes.
So, Tyler, you are Senior Director of Clinical Services. What is it that you do every day, and what is it that the VOA does here now that maybe have been different from when it was Northern Wyoming Mental Health?
Okay, yeah. So my daily, what I do every day is varies from seeing clients, and that seeing clients can, that's kind of a general term for we do mental health and substance use services, treatment services. We see anything from children to adults. We do individual therapy, group therapy. My role also includes supervision of other clinicians doing the treatment, as well as overseeing office management. And
so you're doing a little bit of everything. You're kind of managing, you're steering the ship and being hands on deck too.
Yeah. It's actually kind of a lot of fun that I can be on ground level and doing the work that matters most to clients and meets their needs, but also doing some overseeing stuff too in the management role.
And Kelly, you've been with VOA for a while, I believe.
Yeah, 15 years.
15 years. I thought it was a little while. I wasn't sure. But you've had a career switch recently.
I did. So I'm a trained clinical social worker. And a year and a half ago, I had the opportunity to move into a IT and compliance role. So I supervise all of our IT infrastructure, our electronic health records, our billing, and then also our healthcare compliance.
Okay. And why is that important? Why do we need that?
Well, working in the mental health field and substance use, there's a lot of confidential information that clients talk about, and we need to make sure that they feel safe, that it's not going to go anywhere. And then also, you know, at the end of the day, it's a revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
And so ensuring that the clients that can afford services are receiving the services in a manner that's affordable to them, and that we're also, you know, billing our insurances and our third-party payers like Medicaid, Medicare, and helping clients get attached to those so they don't have such a large out-of-pocket cost for mental health.
So the merger with VOA, or was it sort of a gobbling up? Did VOA kind of take over Northern Wyoming Mental Health? How did that work, and what was the purpose and benefit of that?
So it was actually their board approached our board. So Northern Wyoming Mental Health's board approached VOA's board. Their CEO was nearing retirement and wanted to ensure that the services were going to continue to be provided in the northern part of the state. So Northern Wyoming Mental Health had offices in Sheridan, Johnson, Weston, and Crook counties. And it was just, it was a really good fit at the end of the day.
Okay. And so basically it meant that there was more stability and sustainability of services, am I right in saying that? And that the services continued. Have you been able to broaden services in any ways? Is it materially different from what people could have expected to have received at Northern Wyoming Mental Health?
I would say the basic services, our treatment services are still the same, and I think that's important for people to know, that we still offer mental health and substance abuse outpatient treatment services. The benefit, or a benefit that we've been given with this, is that we're able to pull resources from more areas as well to help meet the needs of our clients. And so this might look like us pulling a clinician or a peer specialist or some other provider from another office and helping them cover services here as needed.
So you described a little while ago, you described some of the services that you offer. They are for both groups and individuals. My sense is, and correct me if you think I'm misrepresenting this, is that there has been more of a willingness for people to seek out services, but still mental health has a bit of a stigma to it. People don't want to admit that they may have a problem. it may be seen as a weakness and we just need to kind of butch up. And are you seeing anything different from that? There's a lot of conversation about the global pandemic and the effect on mental health and so on. We had definitely an impact here in Wyoming, but not as significant as other places in the world. Are you seeing anything different?
I would say that, it's hard to say without numbers, but I would say that we are seeing more people come in for services and being a little bit more open to admitting that there's a problem and this problem is beyond me and it's okay if I ask for help.
So do you have to be in crisis to receive services? How do people find you and get referred to you?
Great question. No, you don't have to be in crisis, although we see plenty of crisis situations and help people navigate that. We receive referrals from individuals, families referring family members, the legal system, the hospital, the law enforcement, including the jail. And so it really varies. But a lot of people, it kind of depends, speaking about the crisis, it kind of depends. Some people, maybe come around to the idea that they need help earlier, so they come in and seek help before it's a crisis. But some people aren't able to recognize that, or they don't recognize it soon enough for whatever reason, and it is a more urgent issue.
So do you see a very strong link with substance abuse and mental health issues? Are they always linked together?
I hate to use an absolute word like always, but I think that's what we would find if we were to break the numbers down, is there's a link between mental health and substance abuse. Definitely see that there's some, if we're able to dig deep enough, so to speak, I think we'd find mental health behind every substance use disorder.
And so what is the kind of treatment that you can offer, and how do you know that it's working?
Yeah, as far as substance use goes.
You offer those two distinctly different services. Sometimes they come to you, they're presented in a client in a conjoined manner, but if I was somebody who was struggling, maybe I'm struggling with substance abuse, maybe I'm drinking a little bit too much and it's becoming a little bit of a problem for me, or maybe I just want to just crawl under the sheets every morning and not get up, or I become very anxious and so on, what could I expect to happen if I cross your doorstep?
Good question. I think in our field, we try to take a client-centered approach. And so that means that we develop our goals and our treatment plan based on the client's presenting problem or the reason why they came in for services. So we try to develop goals focused on that. And we usually measure progress based on what that goal is. Whether that's drinking less or drinking not at all, or feeling more motivated, more positive, less anxious, more willing to get out of bed and face the day.
So do you tell people what to do? Do you come up with a kind of a daily plan of do this and you'll feel better? How does the process work?
That's a good question too. Not usually. We make recommendations and of course, this is client centered. So we try to wrap the client in and gauge what they're willing to do and I guess take steps that way. The concern is we don't want to push someone faster than they're ready to run yet.
So a typical client would see you on a weekly basis, or is there nothing typical?
There's nothing typical, I would say. It varies depending on the severity of the
illness. Need.
Yeah, at need, yeah. Yeah, weekly to bi-weekly to monthly. It just kind of depends.
One of the things that I've seen change with the merger is the addition of additional providers in our office. So not only do we have licensed therapists, but we have a peer specialist who has lived experience. And there's a lot of research out there about having somebody walk alongside you who has some of that lived experience. So they're that image of I can be successful and I'm going to work with you and here's what worked for me. It may not work for you, but here's what worked for me and let's find out what else can work for you. So it's a full team approach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talked about what else is available in Johnson County. You know, with this merger, it's brought the Buffalo and Sheridan and the North region into a family of services in the South as well. Because we have 4 clinics in the South. We have residential substance use treatment. We have residential mental health treatment. Social detoxification. And that's just our behavioral health. And then what we also do is then connect to our other resources. So whether it's veterans who need housing, veterans who need help navigating the medical system, individuals who are over the age of 65 who need housing help for like an assisted living or a low-income housing. And so this is not just mental health and substance use, it's opening the doors to all of our other services and basically treating the whole person.
And we all are indeed whole people. We're not cut out of into little slices, compartmentalized by financial needs and so on. So do you have treatment centers here? I mean, if there's somebody who needs to kind of maybe go to some kind of rehab facility or a detox facility, does that exist here, or do they kind of, or do you have good connections to help support people who may need to do that?
Yeah, we do have residential treatment facilities nearby, and the closest one would be in Sheridan. And with the merger, we've seen a stronger connection between the residential treatment services and outpatient. Although I think we've always had a good relationship, mm-hmm. but it's been more easily accessible and more direct. We helped people connect with other treatment facilities throughout the state, as well as our VOA facility in Cheyenne, but also other treatment centers run by other agencies in the state. And just kind of based on what the client's needs are, where they're going to find social supports, where they want to go as well, where they feel like the best fit would be, we can help them connect to those facilities. And not only residential substance abuse treatment, but also mental health, psychiatric treatment facilities as well.
Okay. So one of the problems that Wyoming has is that it leads the nation in suicide mm-hmm. rates. And I know that the Governor Gordon is working a lot. He's really stepping up action and support for services that help to mitigate against suicide and suicidal ideation and so on. What new programs are coming on that you are excited about?
Well, I think, I hate to call it a new program, but I think we're lucky to have crisis stabilization units throughout the state. Nothing locally yet, but those facilities offer psychiatric and acute mental health care for someone in need that maybe isn't to the level of total lockdown inpatient psychiatric care. They can get in there, they can get psychiatric medications, they can get basic skill development, and then well enough to discharge into into the community back home where we can pick that up and offer outpatient.
So do those forms of treatment work, or do they just kick the can down the road? I mean, do you just stop somebody from fatally hurting themselves for a period of time, or does it really begin to kind of build a success and people can restore themselves, or for the first time maybe find themselves living in a fulfilled and healthy way? Does it work?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, there's plenty of situations that I can recall that clients receive the help they need and then they come home. It doesn't end there though. You know, this is going to be a chronic illness if they're diagnosed with a mental health disorder. So I think that's where the divergence occurs between someone who develops and accepts the illness and is able to learn how to live a healthy and productive life versus someone that isn't. They learn to develop the skills and this is where the peer specialist that Kelly was talking about play another critical role in is teaching people there is hope with living with mm-hmm. a mental illness. And it could be even a severe mental illness, like a psychotic disorder, for example. People live normal lives every day with mental illness. I think that's important for people to know.
You know, we're starting to see a trend to reduce the stigma around mental health, but also begin to recognize mental health and substance use issues as true medical issues. We treat it similarly to diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
We treat it similarly to heart conditions. If you are a diabetic, you may have lifelong treatment to address your diabetes. Similar issues occur with mental health and substance use. You know, when somebody goes into our highest level of care and they come out back into the community, it's about, you know, making sure the connections are in place and they're following the treatment plan recommended as you would take your insulin. You know, ours is just maybe some therapy or some medication.
And I think, you know, some people have found it hard to kind of recognize that an illness that you can't sort of see tangibly, yep. You don't see a tumor on a MRI, you don't see, a sore on an arm, you don't see a broken limb. You know, we're waking up to the notion that people can still be ill in themselves mentally and emotionally, but you can't see it. So mm-hmm. I think that describes that really nicely. So we've talked a lot about they and people and clients. Who are they? Is it, what is a, you know, who comes through your doors and who are you here to serve?
Everyone. They,
and does that
they
really apply? I mean, are you really seeing everyone?
Everyone. You know, we are fortunate in the state of Wyoming that mental health and substance use is a focus or paramount focus of the funding model. And we are one of the only states left that the state subsidizes mental health and substance use treatment. And so anyone can walk through the door, whether they have insurance, whether they have no insurance, they may be homeless, have no income. We are there to help.
And so how does the payment work? Because at the end of the day, so much comes down to money. So if I need services and I find myself at your door, maybe willingly, maybe with a little reluctance and so on, but if I do, how do I pay for this?
So we set up a sliding fee scale. And for individuals, we look at their main income source, how many people are in their family, what they can afford or what they cannot afford to pay. Our case managers and our peer specialists will work with individuals to help with some money management as well, because we all have bills to pay, but this is also something that's very crucial and important. And, you know, residentially, I can speak, you know, to our substance use program, that population on average pays $10 a day for substance use treatment. Where if you were to go out of state, you're talking thousands of dollars.
$10 a day seems very reasonable.
It is. And even our clients
and maybe cheaper than a bottle of whiskey.
It is. And then, you know, clients that come in for our individual services, on average, pay $5 a session.
So, I mean, one of the kind of signature themes of the moment is just how hard the economy is for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are many, many people in our community who are struggling just simply to put food on the table. And they just don't feel that they have the leeway to kind of afford something, mm-hmm. even if they want to. But you've just described something that probably is within reach, or that you can make within reach.
I make it within reach daily. My team works with clients to figure out what's an affordable rate of treatment, how we can accommodate them, so that they can, we know that once they receive the services to work on their wellness, then they're going to be contributing members of society, and it's all cyclical. So if we can help them get better, then it improves everybody's outcome.
Mm-hmm. And so you really are, for everybody from the teenager who's wobbling, mm-hmm. just not sure that they're just really struggling to kind of hold it all together, from everybody to the kind of much older, crusty ranch guy who can't cowboy up anymore, or
absolutely.
Doesn't want to cowboy up anymore.
Yeah, children to teenagers to young adults to older adults to...
So are you seeing a difference in the kind of issues that are being presented to you? You've been a clinician for many years, so are you seeing things changing? Are we as humans responding differently to maybe how we were before? Are you seeing things manifested or presented in different ways?
That's something I'd have to think about a lot. But I think what comes to mind is immediately is, you know, increased suicidality, as hard as that is to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's becoming a greater unhealthy coping strategy is to assume that suicide is the only or the best answer. And so I would say that there is an increase in suicidal thoughts in the world.
And I think families who have suffered the unbelievable pain and agony of having a loved one commit suicide from their family, they often say, I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it was that bad. And so, do you have any remarks on kind of how families can help people that are living with them and amongst them and that are in their family units, or even just loved ones and friends, how you should approach that thing? Should you ask people if they are feeling suicidal, or is that just going to push them over the edge? What do you do?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kate, and that's a common misconception is, you know, we're afraid to ask people, hey, are you thinking about suicide? Because we don't want to make them think it, so to speak. But what we found is that's not correct. That asking people, generally speaking, actually increases or strengthens a relationship, shows that, hey, I care about you enough to ask this hard question, and brings people closer together and opens communication doors that can be helpful.
So what do you do if instead of when you ask somebody and you say, are you okay? And they say, yeah, I'm fine. And then you sense that they're not really okay, and you probe a little bit more and you ask about whether they're feeling suicidal, and they say yes, what do you do? Do you call 911? What do you do?
Yeah, good question. Good question. Let me start with the how do you ask someone?
Mm-hmm.
Because that can be kind of confusing too. But I would say just very directly, hey, are you thinking about killing yourself? Are you thinking that things would be better off, or the world would be better off, or that we would be better off without you? So ask very directly. And then after that, if they say yes, then it's time to just first talk to them and get an idea as to how hard things are for them or what's leading to those thoughts. You don't have to be a clinician. You don't have to be a therapist. You just have to be a friend and listen. That's your role in that
so
situation.
You don't need to fix it.
You don't have to fix it. One of the number one factors that indicate recovery or whether someone will be able to get through substance use or mental illness is social support. And so being there listening, you are a social support, and you're increasing the likelihood of their recovery just by listening. Once you've heard them, then it's time to reach out and help them connect with a professional. So at that point, you could call our center and ask to speak with an on-call person to kind of...
Do you need the person's permission to do that, do you think? Or can you just call and say, I'm worried about my friend, they don't know I'm calling? Can you do that?
You can do both. It does work better when you speak to your friend and say, hey, I think we need to get someone's help. And I want to call Volunteers of America. Can we call together, or can we go in there together? I'll be there. I'll support you.
And then that's. I mean, thank you for describing and giving us some tools and a roadmap for how we could talk about these difficult things, and not want to, because the stakes seem to be very high, and you don't want to make a bad mistake when somebody is in that sort of crisis. But I think that also brings it back to making those issues not just, you go to therapy and you get it sorted out. It becomes a shared,
yes,
a shared concern.
You know, the other thing, though, is that, so I know sometimes people don't want to seek services in their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I don't want to go into Volunteers of America. You know, they know me. There's been a push nationally, and they've launched it again. It's the 988 suicide line.
Yes.
You can text 988. You can call 988. And you can have resources to walk you through what situations you may be having. So whether it's the friend saying, what do I need to do with my friend? How do I get them connected? Or that person who's thinking, wow, you know, life's not worth living right now, but I maybe want to talk to somebody.
Thank you for pointing that out, because not everybody wants their car to be in their parking
right.
lot, you know.
And the other thing, though, with you mentioned that not the stigma around not wanting the car in the parking lot, the pandemic allowed us to broaden our availability. So,
do you offer telehealth?
We do.
Yeah, it's not right for everyone, but it is right for many too. So it's definitely an option that people can talk to their therapist about.
And that adds not only a convenience level from having to kind of maybe travel and get away from work and do something, but also that added layer of confidentiality
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much to you both for spending some time and talking with 307 Net Radio about this new facility, its new iteration, its new form, and for what you do and how it really is for anybody and everybody, and how affordable it can be.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Kelly.